On this week's episode, Alan and I are going to be discussing some common coonhound rule misconceptions we hear out on the road. We hope you enjoy this one.
You're listening to the UKC Hunting Ops Podcast, celebrating hunting dog heritage, competition, and community. United Kennel Club has been the hunting dog sports home for coonhounds, beagles, retrievers, pointers, cur, feist, and more for over 125 years.
This podcast is fueled by Yukonuba, the official performance dog nutrition partner of UKC. Welcome back to the UKC Hunting Ops Podcast. This is Trevor Wade. I'm the Coonhound Program Manager at UKC, and I'm joined today by the Director of Hunting Ops, Alan Gingrich. What's going on today, Alan?
Well, I'm doing all right. Ready for another episode here. We're going to do a little bit different one today, so I'm kind of, this will be an interesting one, I think.
Yeah, we were kind of brainstorming on some different ideas as we get into the, we've talked a lot about upcoming events and previewing events, and now we're going to have a bunch of event results over the next couple of weeks because we got a lot of major events going on. But hey, try to think out of the box a little bit. And you and I have both been on the road. You've been on the road a lot more than me over the past 20 years. For the past 5 years, I've been on the road talking to people. And there's just sometimes those rules that you just can't hammer into people's heads enough. And I kind of labeled this one here, common coonhound rule of misinterpretations or misconceptions. And You hear a lot of things out there that I sometimes call them the good old boy rules that you don't find in any rule book or advisor column, but it kind of just gets handed down and handed down. And it's kind of just what people go by.
Yeah, there's some, you know, 20 years for me, and there's some of these that I've heard 20 years ago, you still hear today.
Yeah.
Some of them that we have in here, actually, so.
Yeah, I think we got some good ones here. Obviously, we can't sit here and talk about everyone or didn't think of everyone just in a brainstorming session here, so. If you guys see me out, or if you want to call in or email in with some of the misconceptions you hear sometime, and I'm not really talking about rule misinterpretations when you're in the woods. I'm talking about more just some things that people just have gone by forever that are just flat out incorrect, and you know it. Be interesting to talk about some of that stuff.
We could
do more stuff like this in the future, maybe.
Yeah.
Hoping to have them all here in one spot so people can listen to them and get them all at one time. So I think that'll be pretty cool. But we're going to start out with some of them right here off the bat. And there's two of them that kind of go together that I hear almost every time I'm out at a hunt on a weekend. And either the master of hounds tells me he had a question about this the night before, or you talk to somebody around the clubhouse who said that they tried to minus their dog from a tree. And the two that I'm talking about is when you're heading into a tree and a dog meets you off the tree and they say, well, the dog put its nose to the ground, so it's minused. Or it left the umbrella of the tree, so it's minused. And both of those, how long have you been hearing those two misinterpretations?
Long time. You know, when they used to hunt, you know, a lot of times before the hunt would start, the judge would ask somebody or ask the cast, you know, what, have you got anything to say about your dog? Somebody would always say, hey, mine might meet me off the tree.
Yeah.
You know, and then sometimes every now and then you get that judge, well, that's perfectly fine as long as he doesn't put his nose to the ground. You think, right. Oh gosh, here we go. This is going to be a long night.
It's pretty funny. I wrote about this just a couple months ago, probably in the past several months, in the advisor column, and I pulled up some old columns to refer to, and one of them was actually one from Todd Kellum. He called it legislating tree style.
Yeah,
and I've actually used it, and I think maybe you have used it before.
I'm sure
too.
I did.
And I think he originally wrote that like in the early 1990s or something.
Probably so. Probably mid 90s.
Yeah. I think it was definitely before 2000. So we're talking about 25 plus years now that this has been written about that we know of, probably before that. So it's kind of funny, but it's just adding things to the rule book that aren't there. And I cited a couple rules here. And, you know, we're kind of dispelling these misconceptions. We won't get too deep into a rules discussion like we do on some of our podcasts. Yeah. But rule 4I, if you look in rule 4I, it tells you a dog will be minused. When a dog that is declared treed leaves that tree, the dog's tree points are minused. Simple as that. There's it's not going to tell you how far they can go, or it's not going to give you anything about dog's nose being the ground of the umbrella. If you shoot forward to a rule 11B, which talks about when you're arriving at the tree, 11B, the second sentence in that section says, a dog should not be minus tree points if he comes back a short distance to meet handler if dog goes back in and trees satisfactorily.
I know. It seems like we never know what a short distance is. What is a short distance? You know, just things like that. You know, but I don't know. It's not hard at all.
Yeah. Your dog either left the tree or it didn't.
Yeah.
And when you add too many when you make it so specific that, it, and I think in that column it refers to when you start having to carry a yardstick or a measuring tape, you've made your rules a little too specific. In this case, we're houndsmen, and we kind of you can tell if a dog left a tree.
Yep.
Don't add the words in there.
So. Yeah. But yeah, that putting their nose to the ground or whatever, you know, and oftentimes a dog will, when it comes back to meet a handler, you know, which is the rule book says that's totally fine so long as they go back and treat satisfactorily, you know, but it's oftentimes, like I mentioned, somebody says, well, as long as he don't put his nose to the ground, well, I don't know, they're scent hounds, you know, and I think naturally dogs are going to put their head down oftentimes when they go from point A to point B, whether they're really sniffing at something or whether that's just their natural instinct to do so, probably more so their natural instinct to do so. And we want to somehow, heaven forbid they do that when it's going back to a tree. Sometimes all depends who's judging, but no, you should, you know, when a dog puts his head down, I've always tried to use or tell guys, you know, hey, judge the dog for what it's doing. What's it doing when it puts its head down? Is it still on its way back to the tree, or is it stopping? Is it snooping around and milling around looking for another track? Big difference. And if you can't make up that, decide that, or can't tell what the dog's doing, then you probably shouldn't be carrying a scorecard yet either, you know, at that point, but it's usually not that hard. Oftentimes there's a lot of dogs that are getting minused incorrectly for that shouldn't be. And when they're trying to be just being too particular with that and going a little overboard with it. But then the other part of it, the other side of that also is, by golly, the dog better also go back to the tree. Right. We're not going to stand here and it's going to stop halfway back and it's going to smell something over here on the side and be caught up in that, you know, and mess around over here, figuring out what this is and da-da-da-da this. No, I'm going to minus that dog. You know, but not just automatically putting his nose down.
Yeah. Well, we've kind of, to be on the other side of it like you are right now, we've kind of discussed this one a lot of times, and I always hear you say, just teach your dog not to meet you off the tree. You won't have any issues.
Hey, pretty simple things. I know. That was, you know, for me, that was one of the easiest things for me. That and, meeting a dog off a tree or meeting the handler off of a tree when you get there, was one of the easiest things I've found to train dogs not to do. It just eliminates all that. You know, you don't have to have any, even have those discussions. Number two is going back to the same tree.
Yeah.
Those two things, I've never had a dog that was hard to break of either one. Yeah, it's going to take a little bit, but you can do a little training, get that fixed.
Just be consistent.
Yep, just eliminate some of that stuff sometimes.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the next one here. Another one you hear a lot out on the circuit. Talking about a babbling rule, and a lot of times you'll hear the
gotta
phrase,
carry the carry track the out track gotta out. Carry the track out
yeah and I think that, and we both know that probably comes from PKC's rule interpretation.
It does,
but it's, if you read our rule book, you won't find that phrase anywhere in our rule book in reference at all, especially not in reference to the babbling rule. So quickly before we discuss it, I'll read the babbling rule just so everybody knows. It's rule 2B in the rule book. It says, dogs declared struck and determined to be babbling shall be minused on strike. If there is any question when a hunting judge is used, the cast must vote immediately. It takes a majority of cast vote to minus. A tied vote results in deleted strike points. Pretty straightforward. You'll see a little asterisk beside babbling in the rule book, and that means there's a definition at the end of the running rules, and it defines babbling as simply saying when a dog opens three times or has been struck where no track is evident. That's what it is. It never mentions carrying their track out or... I think you can look at it two different ways. First off, dogs can babble even if they carry a track out. They can start barking as soon as you cut them loose and bark all the way until you pull them off a tree, and they didn't smell a coon for the first half of it because you're standing in the middle of a field where no coon has been. It's just a common sense rule almost, and it's a judgment call is what it boils down to. But saying that they must carry their track out is not something you'll find in our rule book.
It is not, no. It is not, you know, and I know guys try to use that sometimes, but I think you're right. It comes from other registries where they do have that rule, and that's nothing against that rule at all, but we don't, in UKC, we don't have that.
Right.
It's as simple as, like you said, dog opens three times and has been struck where no track is evident, and, you know, who makes that determination? Well, the judge makes that determination.
Yeah, and the good thing about it is that the way that the voting falls out, you can get it voted on right then and get it resolved pretty quickly.
It is, you know, and I'm not here to say that's an easy one, an easy call to make always, but I think it's, I don't know, sometimes I think we've taken it so far, the whole babbling thing, we've taken it so far with excuses for it, you know, and I don't know, to me, a babbling dog is a faulty dog to me, but that's just me. But we've taken it so bad out of whack that it's like sometimes I don't even like to even have those conversations anymore. Right. You know, it's just like, really, are you kidding me?
I've been beaten in the ground.
I know, you know, no, prove it. Okay, well, you've never been able to necessarily prove it. But the other part of it is also not to come on, man. You know, I always think back of this one guy that told me one time he had a couple dogs that he was just getting an argument. He was judging the cast, wanted to minus them for babbling. And the two guys in the cast were just, nope, they're not babbling. So he finally drives up to one spot, drives back to the woods, long lane back to the woods, gets the dogs out, walks back the lane where they just drove from, walks about 200-300 yards up the lane there. Then they stops and says, all right, turn around, let's turn them back to the woods. And they let him hand led him, you know, all the way up this trail or whatever, and no dogs opening up or whatever, and flipped him loose, and those two dogs are opening up again all the way down to the woods. And he's like, I sure couldn't smell anything on the way back here.
Oh, my, that's a good one.
But I don't know. But, yeah, so there you go. You know, it's yeah.
Yeah, it's just a judgment call.
And I think really the rules, really, I hate to say it, you know, I remember when the rule change used to be back in the day, in the first 3 minutes of the hunt, you did not have to declare your dog struck. And that was probably still the best rule for that, because I remember back in those days, you didn't have the babbling dogs. And if you did, you had to work on them. And I know there were several dogs that I was involved with sometimes that you had to try to work with as best you could, you know, to keep them from babbling and kind of try to train them as best you can. I think a lot of that is that's a whole lot different than training one to come meet you off the tree and things like that, you know. But back then they just didn't hunt a babbling dog, and you know, and some, I don't know, some of that is partially genetic maybe or what have you, you know. But when we changed the rule. Because then the difference then was oftentimes they would babble when you first turn them loose.
Right.
You know, and now when you have a minute to do that, they're barking for a minute. Now they're 200-300 yards away. And how are you going to now even try to make that call? It's so much harder to make. Back then, after that first dump, you know, they were on or the third bark. They were, you know, it was easy to make that call back then. And then it was also a lot easier to say, you know, well, they're babbling, you know, or they aren't, you know, as opposed to the way the rule is now. But I remember when it passed, you know, the rule, and then the rule that I'm talking about is one we still have today, where every time you turn a dog loose, you have 1 minute before you have to declare it struck. Yeah. And I think at the time, I think the idea was great, but gosh darn it, it's now we have this. Yeah. And to go back to that, I don't know how we would ever get to that.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
So there's the babbling track out discussion. Next here, we'll move on to, and this is one that I get asked a lot. I'm not sure if there's any officials out there that are trying to enforce this rule or anything, but you just hear this question asked a lot. And it's talking about strike opening up when a dog has holding a strike position and in the meantime, two coons are scored. And that's kind of an older rule, if I'm not mistaken. That's,
yeah, it
was that before your time even?
Or? No, that was in before me, and actually that changed since I've been here.
Okay.
Yeah, changed since I've been here. I don't know what year it was. I'm going to say probably 2010-ish maybe, something
okay,
like
so
that.
Relatively
yeah.
recently.
Yeah. Yeah, not that long ago, 3-4 rule change years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it used to be the strikes would open back up after two coons had been scored or after an hour passed. And really, you know, sometimes I've seen a lot of times when a dog would just go in there, just boom, tree one right over here, you know, and turn loose and tree another one here. And boom, while the first set of dogs are still running their first track, now the strikes open up for this dog right here.
Yeah.
And it's that happened more than you think, especially in thick raccoon, you know.
Yeah. Nowadays, but, with how the rule is, you rarely ever see it when an hour has to go by.
And I think that's probably a rule that gets overlooked a lot.
For
you
sure.
know that you know that strikes are supposed to open back up again after a dog has held the position for 100.
Yeah.
You know, for an hour. I mean, for
yeah.
an hour. That's still in there. One yeah. hour.
Let's see, the rule that we're referring to here is in Rule 11D, talking about the ninth and tenth sentences in Rule 11D. And Rule 11D is in reference to recasting.
Yep.
Sorry, I should have trusted my instinct there. It says, a dog cannot be struck in over a position that is being held except when a dog holds its strike position for 1 hour. In that case, all strike positions will be open to other dogs. Mm-hmm. So let's just for example, and I think most people probably understand this, but for example, we cut them loose, you strike right out of that truck for 100, and in the meantime, the other dogs are tree and coons around us, but yours has beelined it out of the country, and now here an hour's passed, and we're about to cut some dogs loose off of a scoring situation, let's say, and in that case, the hour's passed now, so 100 becomes open whenever we cut our hounds loose.
Yeah. You know, sometimes we do a lot of play-by-plays and this and that in our world hunts and different big hunts and things like that. I guarantee there has been on more than one occasion when the judges did not go, and I'd be sitting back there thinking about this real, man, are they going to get this or are they not going to get in? That nobody says, it's not even thought of.
Right.
You know, I'm like, dang, they just totally missed it.
Yeah. It seems to be more of an after-the-fact type deal because you'll hear people come and say, well, it happened last night, and we didn't know what to do because we didn't know what time they struck. Like, how did we know? And that's if you're judging, keeping track of when dogs strike in would be a good use of that timekeeping.
That's exactly right. That's what I was going to say, you know, and that's what I always tried to do, kind of be conscious of that, you know, when dogs strike and what time that they did strike to kind of have note of it, you know.
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen all that often, but it sure does happen.
Yeah, it seems every now and then it pops up, and I don't know how often it's enforced, but you get asked about it a lot.
Yeah, but hey, the second part of that whole topic there is what happens to the dog, and I think a misconception here that could throw in here is they want to somehow penalize that dog for holding that strike for that long, and there is no penalty for it.
What do you do with that dog's 100?
Nothing. You do nothing. It's in that case, there might be a couple dogs holding the same strike position. That's something other than 25.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, nothing. There's no penalty or anything like that.
No minus, no delete. They just, you may have two dogs carrying 100 strikes and whatever the situation. Next one here, and one that I've seen popping up recently, seems like, and it's in reference to two dog casts, and it's about needing a non-hunting judge for a two dog cast. And then in UKC's night hunts, we only require a non-hunting judge on one dog cast, two dog casts. You can put a hunting judge on that cast. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, you can. You know, you're not required to have one. You know, I know Todd Killam used to always harp on, well, you got to have a majority to plus or minus, and that's true. You know, in this case, in a two-dog cast, you both have to see the coon, or you both got to agree it's a slick tree, you know, before you minus it or whatever, you know. But I don't know. Seems like we have a lot of folks kind of harp on, we need this third person or what have you, you know. And I don't know. And I get it sometimes. But, gosh, sometimes I also think, man, we are not giving anybody any credit as far as being reputable anymore either.
Right.
You know, there's got to be something there, you know. It's like, hey, can't just because there's only two of us, not everybody is out to, you know, to use every stinking rule they can to try to gain an advantage here. Or in this case, you know, I'm not going to see your coon because I don't have to, you know, or what have you, this or that, or now we're never going to, you know, get it, you know, I'm going to rule in a way, or I'm going to vote in a way that only benefits my dog. Well, that's just something else, you know. Yep. But I don't know. Personal experience, I've never had bad two dog casts because of not having a third voting member, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
But we hear that talked about a lot.
Yeah. Anytime I have I talked to a club official, they wanted to make sure that they did right by not putting a non-hunter. But, hey, if you got an extra guy who's qualified sitting around, by all means, that's great. Put them on there, but you're not required to.
As a non-hunting judge, you know, the one thing we want to make clear, the rules do not allow you for just to send another voting member along.
Right.
Not a voting member. You know, if you do that, you just make him a non-hunting judge if that's the case.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Now the other thing, while we're talking about that, you know, add a misconception that's not on here. You and I, in a two-dog cast, we can't decide to have Todd Killam be our non-hunting judge.
Right.
We might ask for that, but we're going to have to get the official to approve that.
Yeah.
You know, we can't do that on our own. And that happens sometimes.
And it usually causes issues.
It does. You know, and oftentimes it's because somebody has, you know, I had my buddy along and everything seemed fine to you or vice versa until it really made a difference somewhere. And then I realized, boy, I don't think this was right, you know. And
then you bring it back to the official.
Yeah, now
who could put a non-hunting judge on
here? Now we're in the mud.
Next one here, and this is I don't know when this is another one that used to be a rule that's no longer a rule. And that you used to have to keep track of the time used in your timekeeping box or your note box where you can keep notes on your scorecard. And if I went upstairs and pulled the Automoke scorecards, and I'm talking about, 300 scorecards, I bet 275 of them say 120 used on there.
I know.
Still even today. And that's not the case anymore. It's not a requirement to keep track of time in there or any of that stuff. That box is just for note keeping or anything you need to do in that box. Don't have to write it out
anymore. Yeah, that changed in 2005. And I remember it was actually Todd Kellum that wrote that. That was his very last article that he wrote for the advisor column, had to do with that timeout box. And he wrote a good one about it. I saved it. I don't know if you have it or not, but it was a good one. But he even went as far to say as even if it says, anything else, and you can't use the information in there per se as the Bible, I guess. And,
right.
There's, one thing that happens sometimes is it's just an hour hunt, and they will just inadvertently or wrongfully put in 120 minutes instead of 60 minutes.
Yeah.
Things like that. That doesn't just, say, oh, we got to throw this out. They hunted the wrong time. Well, find out if they hunted the wrong time or not. But you're right. A lot of them think it has to be there, but it does not have to be there.
Yeah, it's funny. You talk about that article. You actually sent it to me. Probably September, October of last year, because that exact issue was a 90-minute hunt. Somebody wrote 120 minutes on it and got scratched from the hunt.
Yeah, I know. And I've seen that. I'm like, sometimes I hear that. It's like, oh, man. Wish they could read that article.
Yeah. No need to write that in there. You guys,
but it's a good box to make notes, like you were talking about for, when dogs struck and just little different things here and there or whatever. Yeah.
Keep track of any time you need to. Having to do with scorecards as well. Not signing the scorecard as a losing handler will get the scorecard thrown out. That's not correct. If you think it is, that's not going to do the trick for you. Just going to get you scratched from the hunt. And you can find that in Rule 6W here. It says handler is scratched if scorecard lacks handler signature or if a beneficial cannot satisfactorily determine accurate scores, dogs affected will be scratched. So just the first part there is what we need to focus on. If scorecard lacks handler signature, if I lost the cast and I thought you were a terrible judge and I'm not signing it and I hope the card gets thrown out when you get back, I'm just going to be scratched from the hunt.
It just shows that you don't know the rules as well as you think you did. That's what that does.
That's right. Yeah. Now you hear that sometimes.
I know.
You really do.
I know. Yeah.
So,
all that does is just scratch you.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can make, it all depends. Maybe it's in an elimination event and you're standing to lose or in a semifinal round or something, and that can make all the difference because if you're in contention to place, even though you weren't a cast winner, but in contention to place, accordingly, you want to make sure you got your ducks in a row, too.
You sure wouldn't want to leave your signature off of a World Zone scorecard. That would scratch it from the whole World Championship.
Yeah, exactly.
So, actually, before we move on, I'm just going to talk about some of the things here in Rule 12 about scorecards. So I thought it might be a good way to kind of wrap up this misconception. It just says, scorecards must be completed in the woods, and no changes can be made later except where a question arises and is noted in the woods. So obviously that just means you can make changes once you get back to the club and have the questions heard.
Mm-hmm.
And here the second part of that, B, says, handler's signature verifies hunting time and scores are correct. Any protest relative to time or scores shall be noted with a question mark. So also there's the misconception that if you sign the card, you're signing that it is correct in every way. And that's not meaning that you think that it's not correct because a call is going to get overturned. You need to make sure everything's correct as it was scored and that the question mark that you, if there's a question in the woods that you need to have resolved, mm-hmm. that your question mark's on the card before you sign it.
Yeah,
signature is indicating that the card's correct.
Yeah, I know at one time in the rule book it said something to the effect of, and it probably still does something to, you still sign it with the, you can still have the right to protest.
Right.
But just by not signing this card, card doesn't mean you don't, you don't agree with something, or if you don't agree with it, you don't have to sign it, And, if you have a question, then that's what the question denotes.
Yeah.
Deal with the question with the question.
Yeah. And it does further clarify and see any handler failing to sign the scorecard in the woods may have the opportunity to sign upon returning the scorecard to and in the view of the master handler hunt director.
That didn't used to be the case. When he came back and it didn't have a signature on it, it was the master hounds would scratch that dog.
It's just been a few years now.
Not too long, yeah.
It must have been the 2020 rule change because I remember.
I think it was before that. I think it was before you came, wasn't it?
Okay, was it?
I think so. Maybe not.
Maybe I was thinking it was my first rule changer.
Maybe it was.
I remember being at
that was a good one to change though.
Being at an event with Doug Cundiff, it might have been the 2019 World Championship, and somebody turns in the scorecard at the World Championship there in Iowa, and he's got it flipped over, and he said, "Before I flip this over, did you sign it? Make sure everything's good." And the guy,
yeah,
I hope so.
Yeah,
flipped it over there, but yeah, pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
Alan, I know we both have new Daltra Pathfinder 2s. How are you liking yours so far?
I'm liking it. I've even had the opportunity now to use mine where I didn't have service, where I download the map of that area, and it works flawlessly. Love it.
I agree. I really like my Daltra Pathfinder 2 as well. I've used it quite a bit the past few months. I really like the crystal clear maps. I like that it doesn't lose service very much, and I don't have many bad things to say about it at all. Daltra Pathfinder 2, the official GPS collar partner of UKC. Yeah, let's move on to our next misconception here. And this one is when you get a call from someone asking if you can walk a hunt out with the dog that's leading the cast on the leash. And this is a call I actually just took one, I think, last week with someone asking me. And in that situation, there was 30 minutes left in the cast. And this dog's up by a coon or two and decides, I'm just going to keep mine on the leash for the rest of the time. No other dogs are declared treat in this situation. He's just going to lead him around while they're going around and listening for other dogs. And if you look in our rule book, that is not something that's supported. Mm-hmm. I just pulled up rule 6H here. And at the beginning of that, it's going to tell you that your dog will be scratched for hunting over or under the advertised time. And heck, if you're in a 90-minute cast and your dog's only hunting for 60 minutes and on the leash for 30 with you leading it around and then not competing, then you're not doing that.
Yeah, no, that's got to hunt your whole hunt time, you know. I think we can go overboard with that, you know, and if there's 30 seconds or something like that left, I think that's a different. I don't think, I'm going to, you know, that's right. the opposite exaggeration of that, you know, yeah. Nobody's going to flip loose with 30 seconds left, you know, but if you still have, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes or what have you, I don't expect, you know, somebody to question that and go back to the master hound and say, heck yeah, you're scratched. You didn't hunt your time. Don't be, hey, that's not hunting the 120 minutes. That's 100 and, you know, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Not a, or whatever your time was, you know?
Yeah. You know, that when I was talking to the guy, he's telling me, I think he was judging the cast and the other handler was not judging the cast. And I'm just, this one's fresh in my mind. This is not the first time I've heard this.
Yeah.
You hear it often, but, in this situation, and the guy's telling him, well, in this case, you know, you guys are kind of, I'm giving you guys an opportunity to get back into it here because I'm up a couple of coons, but what me and that guy are talking about is that just as easily, it could be the other way. That dog could draw some minus or tree a possum or do something and
a lot of things can happen sometimes, all depends. But, we were talking earlier before we started recording a little bit, you know, some of these misconceptions of this and that is, but how often do you also hear about the cast agreeing to ignore a certain rule?
Yeah.
And you could use this as one of them, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we still got 10 minutes left. Hey, let's just all agree to just walk out the time.
Yep.
Well, okay, you're all agreeing to just hunt instead of 120 minutes. You're all agreeing to hunt 110, I guess.
Yeah. They're all knowingly breaking the rule.
And, yep.
Hey, maybe that works out sometimes, but it let something, let a disagreement happen a little bit later on, and all of a sudden agreeing to break the rules isn't turning out too well whenever somebody wants to question something.
Yeah, but when I say that, I don't mean if there's a minute left, you know, and you're making somebody turn loose when it just makes absolutely, it's not that either, you know, but
it's a common sense.
It is.
You don't want to take advantage of the situation. And 30 minutes is definitely doing that. But I think, like you said, a minute or two, come on. If you're pulling off a tree, you have a minute or two left in the hunt and you're up by, you know, you're up reasonably. Before you recast, you could walk a minute or two by our rules and be
It really
fine.
Wasn't that long ago since UKC had the stationary rule either. But back before then, that kind of reminds me a little bit of that. You know, a dog would be leading the cast or whatever. You just leave it sitting there treeing for, I've seen a dog sit there tree for an hour. You know, nobody calling it because he's leading the cast, doesn't need to, doesn't want to, you know.
No gambling.
No gambling, you know, no anything like that. But that's when the stationary rule came in. And I like that rule too, you know. It's score the dogs for what they do, whether it's the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything else in between.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
Hey, you kind of mentioned one that we added to it before we came down, and that's a cast knowingly agreeing to ignore certain rules or breaking rules.
I didn't realize you had noted that there, but
that's
kind of jumped the gun here.
You kind of mentioned one there, but one that I always think of and one that actually happened that we dealt with was an entire club was voting beforehand whether they all agreed to use training collars for the entire hunt.
And it ended up
coming back to us, and we had to reprimand the club a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's like, talking to the club official, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
And that conversation didn't go well between me and the club official, I think. Yeah. But you can't just make up your own rules and go with it, because somebody's going to, you know, you can all agree right then, but it's going to catch its way back, and that's a rule infraction.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So don't, you know, official, that's what the officials are there for, to, you know, that's all that they can go by. They don't make the rules. They're there to enforce the rules, you know, and that's what makes it easy. It doesn't make them a bad person or whatever. You know, you just enforce the rule, you know. If you don't like a rule, always instead of looking ways around it or trying to get everybody to agree to ignore it or what have you, you know, if it's bad or it needs to be changed or you think it should be changed, why propose a change?
Yeah. There's avenues to do that.
Yeah.
There's some rules that I don't like. There's some rules that you probably don't like.
Exactly.
We don't love every rule in our rule book, but we do enforce them because those are the rules.
Yep.
You
got some from the field reps, I see.
Yeah, yesterday I texted all of our field reps and had a couple of good conversations with a few of them that gave me phone calls, and they gave me some that they hear. You know, obviously they're out in doing officiating events, and yeah, we kind of gave us an idea. We have some plans to maybe have a roundtable with them and chopping it up with them over some of the stuff they see in hunts and more of this type of stuff. But just shortly, I'll mention some of the ones that they mentioned that they see a lot. And this first one here is a good one. I should have thought of this one right off the bat because we hear this a lot. And that's whenever you're taking entries at a hunt and somebody's calling and have somebody enter his dog for them. And then when it comes time to draw cast, that fella's still not there. And then they want to say, well, he's got 1 hour to come. He's delaying the cast right now for an hour. He'll be scratched after an hour. And that's not what our rule is.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, we might call it delaying the cast or whatever, because they are technically delaying the cast, but that's not what the delaying the cast rule means or pertains to in the rule book as it's written.
Right. That rule 6E that you're talking about, and we've talked about it on this podcast before, is it only applies to situations in the woods, not before, not at cast draws, none of that.
And number two, after timeout has been called.
Right.
During the hunt. Yep. It's the only time that 1 hour applies. Everything else, like this situation you're talking about, when the cast is waiting on a handler or something, you know, that's the official is going to make that determination. It might not be the same tonight as it will be tomorrow night, or you know, he has to think of different things, a whole bunch of things. If I'm the official, variables. I'm going to think about, you know, hey, you know, what's, you know, is
could
it
be a double header?
A lot of different things, you know. Do they need to get going? Do they have plenty of time? Is there any, you know, are they still going to have to wait a while before they can leave anyways?
Yeah.
All those type of things, you know, are going to play a part in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, rule of thumb is you should be there.
Yeah.
Rule of thumb is you should be there, and don't expect anybody to, you know, don't expect anybody to give you what you think you should get, you know?
Yeah, if you're calling ahead and having somebody enter your dog for you, you're only buying yourself a few minutes if they decide to scratch you right off the bat when they draw cast, because they have that ability.
They do. Matter of fact, we've said that if you call ahead to have somebody enter your dog as conditional, if you weren't there, if somebody else entered your dog, then you need to be there when you're called. That's the only grace period you have, time to get there, you know. But
some cases only buy you a couple minutes.
Yep, exactly right. You know, so.
That rule that they're talking about, just to quickly mention it, 6E, and just like you said, it says be scratched for delaying competition of cast for 1 hour after timeout is called during the hunt in accordance to Rule 7.
Yeah, pretty actually, that word should be completion, I think, of cast.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
For delaying completion of cast.
Yep. So, simple as that. So next one, Philip Foster sent this. He sent a couple of these first ones here, Philip Foster down in South Carolina. Second one here says, he hears the misconception.
It's not like he doesn't know. He just wants us to cover it.
That's right. Just hey, these guys are out working a bunch of hunts, and they hear these same things over and over. So this is good. It's good for you guys to hear guys who officiate a lot of hunts and what they hear.
Yeah.
So the second one here, he hears a lot that timeout being called cancels the 15-minute non-hunting dog clock. And that's not true. And we've written about that multiple times over the past 20
years.
What does
the rule book says? Says consecutive scorecard minutes.
That's right.
Consecutive scorecard minutes means exactly that, scorecard minutes. So if you call timeout in between that, it starts when time's back in, that 15 minutes starts again, you know, or however many minutes you used of it beforehand.
Yeah.
It's still on the clock.
Simple as that. If your 5 minutes are gone on the 15 on a dog and you call timeout, when you go back in, just have 10 minutes to go to out that 15. Simple
That's right.
as that.
Consecutive scorecard minutes. Yep. Yeah.
Next one here, we're going to be talking about the state. He said he hears about the stationary, a lot of misconceptions about the stationary, that when we change the hunt time to 3 minutes, that the stationary is also changed to 3 minutes, but that's not the case. Yeah. That was never up for a vote. They never passed that.
Yeah, I can see that because that was always 5 minutes, you know, but the stationary just stayed at 5 minutes, not 3 minutes.
Yeah, it's still 5 minutes, and I don't know how far we need to get into depth with that, but we talk about the stationary rule. If you're keeping track along and want to highlight in your rule book, that's rule 6M. Tells you if a handler fails to declare or treat a dog obviously treeing, which is a judge's decision, for a period of 5 minutes. So you can highlight that five there. So simple as that.
Yep.
Next one here. You can send a handler to a split tree while Shine Time is actively running on another dog's tree. And boy, do I remember an incident at Southeastern with Mr. Philip Foster himself a couple years ago where there was an unhappy camper over this ruling. But the rule book is pretty black and white when it comes to this.
Pretty black. It's very black and white.
Yeah.
Hey, and that's one that I can see a lot of guys say, hey, let's just all agree. We all voted to allow him to go handle his dog.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? All it's going to take then is you go do that, and one guy, even doesn't matter what they voted or whatever, and somebody questions it, take it back to Mr. Philip Foster. I can guarantee you what Philip Foster is going to rule on that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just exactly by the book. That's all he's going to rule. He can't do it. And if you did it, your night is over.
That's right.
Nothing else matters. I don't care if 10 of you agreed to do it.
Yeah. And this is actually a rule that we talk about, you know, at our world finals and TOC finals, we oftentimes do a little judges meeting on the Thursday beforehand. Yep. And this is one we'll talk about. Don't send another handler to a split tree, even with a non-hunting judge, during another person's shine time.
That's right.
Because if somebody says, hey, I'm okay with it, the minute you send that person away, they're going to want that guy scratched. Yeah.
And it helps for us to make those little notes with the judges just in case, you know, to get them all on the same page. And I feel like it's really helped a lot of times, you know, just to all it takes sometimes is let them, okay, go and try it one time and look what mess you're going to get yourself into.
Yep.
And it's happened before that, or just trying to score dogs out of order because you think it doesn't really matter. Well, guess what? That is another dangerous thing.
Screw a hunt up in
a
hurry.
I don't think that's on our list here, you know, but. And I don't know if that falls under the misconception thing so much what we're talking about today, but that's one I hate is like somebody makes the argument or doesn't think very far into it sometimes. Well, it's not making a difference. This dog is out of it. You know, why does it make a difference? You know, well, it will certainly make a difference for maybe somebody else down the line that is affected by it.
Every minute counts to some of those people.
Exactly, right. And then sometimes when somebody now questions it, now you've got kind of a mess here. So just don't do it. You score dogs in the order they were declared treated. It doesn't matter how far, nothing else matters. You know, the only time that you, I'm getting all sideways here with this, you know, segueing into something that's not even on your list here. But
no, it's fine. I think us discussing rules, people will like that.
Yeah, but just like that is you can have a big mess that's hard to fix and correct and make perfectly fair once you've crossed that line.
Yeah. You know, with the no leash lock, that scoring dogs out of order it's almost obsolete. There was a little bit of a discussion on the forums about it, and maybe why it's fresh in your mind just in the past couple of days, and you cited a rule on there. And I think the word that a lot of them are ignoring is the word handled. That takes all the variables out of it when all the dogs are declared treat and handled.
Yeah.
Because then the dogs can't leave the tree, you know, and all that stuff.
Yeah, but that's when you can score dogs out. Yeah, a very rare occurrence.
But doesn't happen hardly in our hunts anymore. Yep. Where you can score a dog out of order. Yep. Yeah. Last one here, Mr. Mark Vest from down in Texas actually called me with this one last night, and he said this is one down in his part of the country that he has to talk to people a lot, and this one's talking about in the situation he's telling me about rule dogs A, B, and C are declared treed. And when they get in there, dog B has moved, who was treated in for 75. And he's saying a lot of people down there in Cass are wanting to move dog C up to 75 instead of keeping him at the 50 where he belongs. And that's just maybe misunderstanding the rule, I think, or how the tree works.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'd say that's one that's always been one, probably always will be one, you know, where somebody wants to move a dog up incorrectly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know how you can best explain that or whatever. I've tried to explain it to folks a little, as make it as simple as you can. You know, let's just use two dogs, for example, A and B. Dog A trees first, goes in there and trees on this tree, and dog B comes in there, trees behind it or whatever, and then dog A leaves. Now you want to move B up. Well, you're trying, when you're doing so, essentially you're wanting to award B with something that it never did. And that's right. You know, 100 tree points. It doesn't deserve 100 tree points. It deserves 75. It didn't tree there first.
Yeah.
A did. Forget that dog A left. It doesn't change the fact that dog B still treed second.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully if you can look at it a little bit more like from that perspective, you know, then the next thing that comes up, and then it's just like this whole thing is like, okay, you have that conversation with somebody else, you know, but, well, how do you know that's where the dog was treed? Well, you don't, you know, but you and I talked about another rule that we have that I think makes it very simple for the judge. You know, you don't put dogs down as split unless it's obvious to the judge. You know, it makes it easy for me. You know, if it's not obvious to me, I may think they might be, but if it's not obvious to me, then I don't put them down as split. That's I'm going to put them on the same tree. And until I know different, see or hear different, or it becomes obvious to me, whether that's seeing or hearing or what have you, I'm going to put them on the same tree, you know. So that's what you do here. The only time that you don't do that is after a tree is closed. And then, you know, no dog can be declared treed on that tree anymore. But if somebody wants to tree a dog, then that we are going to put them down as split.
Have to. And the tree's closed now.
The tree is closed, you know, and so we're going to put them on a different tree in that case, you know, but that's another conversation. But outside of that, you don't move dogs up. Now, the difference is let's say you have the three dogs. You had A, B, and C all declared, and I couldn't tell that they were split. I put them all down first, second, and third.
That's right. Maybe they're 30 yards apart.
Exactly. And you get in there, and now I see, oh, dog B, he's over here. He's on a separate tree. Now it absolutely makes sense that now I know C was the second dog treed on this tree because B was never here where I thought he might have been, you know?
That's right.
And there's nothing. That's just the way it works, you know? Yeah. And it should work like that.
Yeah.
But that's different than, let's say, B had just left and was never anywhere else or anything like that.
Regardless, C, even if B left that tree, C was still a third dog treed on that tree.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you gave that last scenario because that makes it pretty clear, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, there's other situations where you can have almost an unscorable situation where you just don't know. When there's a couple split trees involved, you know, it can get in the weeds pretty quickly with that whole thing. But I think if you think of it that way and look at it that way, you have to look at it that way.
Yeah.
Don't try to give a dog points that it didn't deserve, you know.
Yeah.
So just because another dog left doesn't change the fact that this other dog treed first now. No, yeah. It wasn't first. A was first.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, I think this was a fun discussion. You know, we kind of brainstormed this just yesterday and threw together a couple of the misconceptions. If we sat around and brainstormed, we could probably come up with some other ones. And I hope we do another part two or part three of this down the road. Obviously, we'll have some time, but the next few weeks are going to be pretty busy. I think you're getting ready to load up right now as we speak and head to
Indiana. Yeah, you're going to help me load up some dog food. And yeah, for the squirrel hunters, we got the World Cur and Feist. World hunt I'm going to this weekend.
You're
going to
get some content down there?
Yep, hopefully. And then next weekend we're going to have the TOC regions. We've got our Clash of Champions for Beagles, same regions there next weekend as well. And
been getting packets together this week for that.
Yeah.
I'm glad to have those out.
Hey, mail. Things are going to really start hitting hard and heavy here in the upcoming weeks here. So.
Yeah, we're going to be crowning a lot of our highest awards in the next couple months.
April's a busy month, but it's a fun month. TOC finals and Hunting Beagle Nationals, Walker Days. They got those pro slams. Those are filling up pretty quickly this year. And yeah, but April's going to be a big month.
And you can listen to all it all right here on the UKC Hunting Ops podcast. Thank you for listening to the UKC Hunting Ops podcast. Be sure to give us a follow so you don't miss any of our new episodes or content.